Well, I began the service by talking about how we're in the third week of a worship series we've called God With Us. And the first week we began by talking about how God is with us in the valleys of our lives. This time of year we have all kinds of mountaintop expectations for what the season will be like. Raise your hand if you've got all your Christmas shopping done. Oh, get after it. Men, have you bought your wife a gift? Everybody raise your hand, men, right? We've got all these expectations, right? Everybody's going to be at our house at the same time on Christmas Eve. They're all going to get along, even though they don't get along the rest of the year. We've got these mountaintop expectations. And when we have mountaintop expectations, we talked about how there are going to be valleys, because reality sometimes doesn't meet our mountaintop expectations. But God talks often in the Bible about valleys, that God is with us in those valleys. And even in the Christmas story for Joseph, Joseph faced one huge valley. He found out that this woman he was engaged to was pregnant. It wasn't his kid. You got to believe that was a valley. And so the author of the book of Matthew makes sure when he tells the Christmas story to use those words that are kind of our theme words for this series. If we can put those on the screen. In the book of Matthew, it says, "The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him
Emmanuel,"
which means God with us. God with us amid those valleys. The next week, last week, we talked about how God is with us in the wilderness. And we talked about how wilderness are these vast periods of our life where it feels like we, as hard as we try, we just can't get out of that wilderness. And sometimes the wilderness can feel like we're lost, we're disoriented. We turn to God, we say, "God, I've had enough." And God's voice in the midst of the wilderness seems really small. Even a whisper. And we ask the question, why does God whisper when we're in the wilderness? Anybody remember? Because God is so close. Because God is so close, that's why God whispers. And so today we're going to talk about how God is with us in the storms. And to do this, I'm going to talk a little bit about hurricanes. How many of you are glad we don't have hurricanes in Minnesota, right? Down south they say, "I'm really glad we don't have blizzards," right? But hurricanes, isn't it interesting that we name hurricanes after people? I've always thought that's kind of odd. We name hurricanes after people. I did a little research this week on hurricanes because I'm a pastor. I only work one day a week, so I need to do something the rest of the week. And so I did some research on hurricanes, and I found out that they haven't always named hurricanes after people. At one time, they named hurricanes after the geographic location of where the storm happened. But in 1954, I'm not making this up, the World Meteorological Organization decided that they were going to name hurricanes after women. Don't make this up. Don't make this up. And so the men who worked, remember, this is 1954, the men who worked for this organization, I'm not making this up, they would name hurricanes after their wives and girlfriends. Now, I'm no ladies' man, but that just doesn't sound smart. Could you imagine them going home to their wife or to their girlfriend and saying, "You know, there's this huge, massive hurricane forming out in the Pacific, and it's going to cause all kinds of damage and just be devastated. And honey, I couldn't help but think of you." Like, this is just not a good idea. Well, in 1979, men got sort of equal rights when it comes to naming hurricanes. They started naming hurricanes after both men and women. But there's something else I found out that was kind of interesting to me, and it's this. When a hurricane is particularly devastating and it's wreaked havoc and it's caused all kinds of devastation, they take that name of that storm and they retire it. Did you know this? They retire the name of the storm. And so Hurricane Katrina, there will never be another Hurricane Katrina. Because they've retired that. They've said, "We don't ever want to experience that again. We want to take that storm. We want to put it behind us. We're putting that name on the shelf." Well, folks, here's what I know. I know for many of us, we face storms in our lives. There are storms that are either brewing or have been brewing or are just on the forefront of our lives. There are storms out there. And some of us, those storms, we're able to name those storms. We're able to name them for ourselves and for those people we love so that they can journey with us through those storms and support us. And for others of us, we keep those storms locked up inside. Maybe it's because we're good Midwesterners or because we're of Germanic or Scandinavian descent. We keep those storms locked inside. We're not going to tell anybody about our storms, and we're going to struggle through that storm alone. Whether your storm is one you've shared with others or you keep it locked inside you, here's what I know about those storms. We all wish we could take those storms and we could name them and then retire them. Put them on the shelf. Put them behind us. Say, I've had enough of you. I am done. That storm of depression, that storm of divorce, that storm of some economic woe in your life, you wish you could just name it and put it on the shelf and be done, retire it. And here's the other thing I know about the storms in our lives. We all do this, whether you consider yourself a church person or not. We universally do this. When a storm rolls into our lives, one of the first things we do is we blame God. We say, why, God? Why did you cause this to happen? Why did you let this happen to my sister or my brother or my husband or my wife? Why me, God? We turn to God and we say, why would you ever do this? Well, today I want to fuss with a phrase I heard a couple of weeks ago. And that phrase goes like this: never let the presence of a storm cause you to doubt the presence of God. Never let the presence of a storm cause you to doubt the presence of God. Would you say that with me? Never let the presence of God, of a storm, cause you to doubt the presence of God. Never let the presence of a storm cause you to doubt the presence of God. And to get at that, we're going to look at a story in the book of Acts. It's about a guy named Paul. And Paul, if you're not familiar with who he was a former persecutor of Christians, of the church. He imprisoned hundreds of Christians, they believed. And he had this radical conversion experience where he went from being against the church to being sort of this super Christian, if you will. All over the Mediterranean, he started churches, and not just any churches. These churches were created for people who didn't have the time of day for church, for faith. He created churches for non-church people, for outsiders to the faith. He did that all over the Mediterranean. And here's the deal. The church, the religious muckety-mucks of the day, hated Paul. They hated Paul because Paul was creating churches for people they didn't believe belonged anywhere near the church. And so these church muckety-mucks had Paul arrested, and then they put him on trial in front of the Jewish Sanhedrin, which was their sort of their judicial branch where they tried cases. And then they brought him before Governor Felix and Governor Festus. And neither of them found any charge worthy of bringing up against him. And so they sent his case all the way to Rome, to Caesar. And in the story we're going to read today, they are on the boat going from Caesarea to Rome. And this wasn't just some 3-hour tour. This wasn't Gilligan's Island. This wasn't Love Boat. This was a long trip. It would have taken months and months and months and months. And earlier in the story, it seems to suggest that this trip was going to take them from one season of the year to another season. It was going to take them through winter. And if you knew anything about being a ship captain in those days, you knew you weren't to be out on the Mediterranean in the winter. You were to park your ship at port and wait out the winter because there were these huge nor'easters that blew in on the Mediterranean. And the story goes that Paul even said to the captain and to the owner of the ship, I don't think this is a good idea. I think we got a port for the winter. But that captain and the owner of the ship, they insisted, we can make it. We can make it through the winter. And so soon enough, a storm blew up And the storm raged and raged. They dumped all their cargo, all their tackle, all their equipment. They threw it overboard so they wouldn't run aground. They threw their anchor out, and there they sat, weathering the storm in the middle of the Mediterranean. And that's where we pick up the story today. It says, when neither sun nor star appeared for many days, the storm was so bad they couldn't see the sun or the stars, and the storm continued raging. We finally gave up all hope of being saved. You see, when we find ourselves in the midst of storms, those storms seem to have this way of raging in our lives. And no matter what money we throw at the storm, no matter what treatment option we choose, no matter how much time we give to that storm, nothing ever seems to have traction. And sooner or later, we start to lose hope that anything will come of it. For some of you, maybe at one time in your life, you said something like this: I'm never, ever getting married. There's no one out there that's going to love me. Or we're never, ever going to make it through this cancer treatment. We're never, ever going to be able to dig ourselves out of this debt. We're never, ever going to be able to help that daughter or that granddaughter going through that eating disorder. We're never going to be able to pay for college. There are times when we go through these storms and we lose hope. Well, Paul goes on, and Paul's there in the boat, and the storm is raging, and he gets a little haughty here. I don't like what he says. After they had gone a long while without food, Paul stood up before them and said some words. I think all of us would want to slap him if we heard him say this. He said, "Men,
you should have taken my advice."
Oh, wouldn't you want to just slap the guy? You're out in the middle of the storm. You should have taken my advice not to sail from Crete. Then you would have spared yourselves this damage and loss. We all hate a know-it-all, right? We all have people in our lives who have told you, "I told you so." But here's the deal. On that boat was a captain as well as the owner of the boat. And they got themselves into this storm. They chose, rather than to heed advice, to head out into this storm. And you know as well as I do, there are times in our lives where our storms are our fault. In college, you didn't study for that test, and instead you stayed up all night eating pizza and drinking beer with your buddies. Or maybe it was a significant person in your life you dated, and everybody told you, "You got to stay away from that guy. He's nothing but trouble." We have these moments in our lives where we get ourselves into the storm. I spent too much money. I procrastinated. There are these storms that we get ourselves into. When I was in college, I dated a girl from Page, North Dakota. Where's Dean Holm? He's probably back there. Dean knows where Paige is. Nobody else on this planet knows where Paige is. There were four kids in this girl's graduating class. And in the evenings, I would travel out to Paige and spend some time with her. And one particular evening, I stayed way too late. And I was tired, and I got behind the wheel of my car, and I headed back. And on the outskirts of Fargo, I hate to admit this, I'm really embarrassed, but I fell asleep behind the wheel. And some of you have heard this story, but I woke to crunching metal and sparks flying everywhere. And I totaled my car. I probably should have died and probably should have injured other people in the process. You see, I got myself into a storm. It was my fault. You see, there are storms we get ourselves into. And I think those are some of the hardest storms, because in those storms, it's hard to forgive ourselves. Better yet, believe that we have a God who's there with us, forgiving us and rescuing us in the midst of those kind of storms. There are also storms in our lives, though, that we get sort of sucked into. There's storms that we didn't create. On that boat, I imagine there were guys whose only job it was to row the boat. And those guys, as they were rowing the boat, they were whispering to one another, "What's this captain thinking? There's a storm here. We got to go back. We got to go to port." You see, we have those storms we get sucked into. Maybe as a kid, your parents went through a divorce. and you got sucked into a family storm. Or maybe you work for a company that made some unwise decisions and that created a storm that led to layoffs. And all of a sudden that meant you were laid off and a financial storm blew up in your life. You see, there are storms of our own cause, but there are also storms that we get sucked into. And we can lose hope in the midst of those storms. The story goes on. It says, "But now I urge you," Paul said, "to keep up your courage, because not one of you will be lost." And I imagine they looked at Paul and said, "What are you talking about?" He said, only the ship will be destroyed. And I imagine they said, "If this ship goes down, we're going down with it." And then it said, Paul said to them, "Last night an angel of the God to whom I belong and whom I serve," help me here,
stood
beside me. I imagine there were moments on that trip where they said, "Hey, Paul, where's that God of yours you keep talking about? Where is he? We're waiting. Sure doesn't seem like he's around." And I imagine Paul said, I know it doesn't seem that way. But guys, I believe that that God of mine is standing right here. I imagine he said to them, "Never let the presence of a storm ever cause you to doubt the presence of God." Well, the story goes on. It says, "And God said to Paul, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must stand trial before Caesar. And God has graciously given you the lives of all who sail with you.'" It's as if God said to him, "Paul, I'm not finished with you yet. I'm not done with you. You've got to make it to Rome. We've got bigger fish to fry." You see, God wasn't done. You see, I think in our lives, God certainly doesn't cause storms. In fact, if you believe God causes the storms in your life, you are simply wrong. God doesn't ever cause the storms in our lives. But what I do believe is that on the other side of a storm, God can use your experience as you walk through that storm to help others. You can say to others, "Hey, I know that storm. It's hard. It's terrible. But I survived. I survived that divorce. I survived those financial woes. I survived that treatment." And you can too. God doesn't cause storms. But on the other side of a storm, God can use those storms through us to aid those around us. Well, the story continues and it says, "So keep up your courage, men, for I have faith in God that it will happen just as he told me." I have faith in who? In God. Man, my faith isn't in this boat. My faith is in God. And the most important story we tell as people of faith, the author of the Christmas story was sure to include the words we're going to put on the screen. We've read these once already. "The virgin will conceive and give birth to a son, and they will call him
Emmanuel,"
which means God with us. If there's one thing I know about the Bible, it's that when it comes to knowing that God is with us, the Bible is nauseatingly repetitious. Like that little kid who stands at your side and says, "Hey, mister, did you know? Hey, mister, did you know? Hey, mister, did you know?" Or like that telemarketer that just won't stop calling. Or here at Calvary, we have a guy who comes and checks our elevator. He's an elevator inspector. I didn't know we needed an elevator inspector. And I never realized how often an elevator inspector needed to inspect. The guy comes all the time. And every time he comes, he just wants to talk about elevators. He loves elevators more than I think he loves his wife. And so when he comes, we all kind of go, "He's here." And then we run. Right? If you know who he is, I'm sorry. You see, if there's one thing we know for sure, the Bible is nauseatingly repetitious when it comes to this fact that God is with you. God is with us in the valleys. God's with us in the wilderness. And God promises to be with us whatever storms you face. If you remember nothing else today, remember this. Never, ever, never let the presence of a storm cause you to doubt the presence of God. Let's pray. Gracious God, you know in this room there are storms raging, and some of those storms we let out, we share with others so they can walk with us, and other storms we, for some reason, we hold on to really tight. But God, you know those storms. You know those storms that rage within us. And so God, we ask that you would remind each one of us each and every day that we never would ever let the presence of a storm in our lives cause us to doubt your presence in our lives. God, we give thanks for this, that you are Emmanuel. You promise to be God with us. We pray this in your name. And all God's people said.
Amen.